Hello, Mr. Bermese.
Oh, Stevie, it's been a dog's a month of Sundays, the dog's age of other stuff.
It has been quite some time since we debriefed Trek together.
You know that I realized last night that I may have missed most of the last season of Lower Decks. I think that's when I was recording that album that Lower Decks was out, and I never caught up.
Wait, did we not debrief it? No. We did
I
not.
I don't think we did no, the we didn't. Most recent. I made a record and then went on tour. And then it was Christmas.
Okay. We're back. Shall we begin?
Yes.
Set Phasers, a highly illogical Star Trek podcast.
Today's Stardate.
It's Stardate 151407.1.
And we're discussing the first episode of the final season of Star Trek Discovery, entitled Red Directive. It's just season 5, everything's at peace, everyone's happy, nothing to worry about, right? So we should just run it down. It's probably just going to be like a vacation to Risa.
Let's run it down.
It's time to run it down.
Can you run it down for me?
Tell me what just happened.
Can you run it down for me?
Oh, I can run it down. It is exactly as we said. It begins with a little immediate res thing, which I feel like we can talk about, but it comes back later. Basically, Michael's on top of a ship in a warp bubble, and everything seems to be going to shit, and the warp bubble is about to fail. But we are kept out of certain little details of things. And then at some point, Michael says, "This is not how I thought the night would begin," or something to that effect. And then we flash back 4 hours later, a mere 4 hours, to a celebration of a millennium of the Federation, more or less, give or take the burn. And it's Michael, and it's Hugh Culber, and it's Paul Stamets, and it's Adira Tall, and it's Sylvia Tilly, standing around one of those German-style beer tables where you stand and get your drinks. And they're drinking the Tonic 2161. They're giving us a lore drop on how things are going. It's, hey, things are pretty peaceful. We're doing all right. The Spore Drive has been shuttered because of the Ruan Tarka situation where he stole the prototype and went God knows where. Stamets is now just a scientific luminary. He's a little bummed about that. Michael gets rattled when Stamets says part of the reason is because of Booker. But then she gets called away to go be a diplomat. And Tilly's like, don't worry about it. Even though Booker and Michael haven't talked in months, she's mostly fine. But then she sees somebody whose name we don't get in episode 1. Some tall, dark, and handsome drink of water fellow teacher. And she's like, oh, I got to get out of here. See ya. Cut to Saru and Tarina. Saru gives us the lore drop. He's been asked by the president to become an ambassador for planets on the sort of like far side of the edges of the Federation. He would have to resign his Starfleet commission to do so. And he's talking to Tarina, and Tarina's, don't think about our relationship when you make this choice. And he goes, okay. But that's where Saru's at. We do get two mentions that I think are important at that point. The Tholian Republic and the Breen Imperium, which I guess are the empires on the edges of the Federation that Saru as an ambassador would be protecting these settlements from. Meanwhile, Michael gets a mission talking to some luminaries. And then Admiral Vance shows up and gives her a little infinity bracelet tchotchke earring thing with a photon bouncing around inside of it, I'm guessing. And they go to meet in the infinity room. And Kovich and Vance. And they're told that they have to go find this 800-year-old science vessel at the edge of the Beta Quadrant. Kovich won't give them any details. And Michael's, what's up? And he's, it's a red directive. Just do as you're told. So Michael assumes her crew. They head off to the Beta Quadrant to be met by another ship that's traveling at regular warp, and they're going to do the sport thing. Meanwhile, we cut to the ship. Two thieves in things, and they're walking around, and then they find atmosphere, and they reveal themselves. It's a lady and a fella. And they're like, they grab a bunch of stuff, and then they're like, oh, this is a really important thing in this other place. And the ladies, let's go get it. And then the guys, hey, maybe we get what we got and just go get to a holo suite and do our thing. So I guess they're criminals and lovers. How do you like that? We don't get their names then, but I'm definitely going to be spoonerizing them often. They go hunting on the ship. On Disco, they arrive. Kovach says, hey, use deadly force if you have to. I don't care what happens to the people on the ship. We just have to get the objective. They go down to the ship. The two thieves are gone. They pursue them using the aerosol water droplets in the air, go to a room, find a dead Romulan, been dead for 800 years, find an empty vault, realize that it's only been 4 minutes and there's no way they could have cracked the code that fast, so they're still here. A shootout ensues. Fortunately, these two hardened criminals decide to use non-lethal tactics on the Federation, which is probably smart. They immobilize Owl and Reese, who are part of the away team, but Michael's able to pursue them, tries to talk, finds out what they took is a Romulan puzzle box. So anything can be inside of it. And then the thief, whose name I think he's Maul and she's Locke.
Other way around. She's Maul, he's Locke.
She's Maul, he's Locke. Thank God for you. And she's Maul, he's Locke. So Locke throws a grenade, blows apart the hull of the ship. Michael falls through. Super cool thing where her regular suit turns into a space suit. She falls down right onto their ship. They enter warp. Discovery follows. The other ship arrives. The Antares with an antagonistic captain by the name of Raynor, who has the ship in the warp bubble with a tractor beam, which is why the warp bubble is unfunctional, and Michael and Raynor have an argument about what to do, and Raynor's like, I know these criminals, if we let them get away, we won't find them for months. And Michael's like, you're gonna rip this ship apart and then we won't be able to get the thing that we need. Anyway, she's able to convince Raynor at the last minute to let them go. They fall out of warp. The ship with Maul and Locke, who you're gonna have to keep reminding me who's who.
You can remember by Maul, as in imagine it's short for Molly.
Okay, so the lady's name is Molly.
Mm-hmm. And we're going, yeah.
Now, you know this is going to set a precedent where I think her name is Molly.
It's possible, yes.
I'm going to call her Molly for the next several weeks. All right. Maul, lady, Locke, lad. Locke's a lad.
I love that. Great. Good job.
Does that work?
Yeah.
We'll see if it sticks. Anyway, they get away, and then there's all these warp signatures, and they don't know what to do, and they meet back on the bridge, and Kovach is you're really screwing up my plan here. And then they're like, we got all these warp signatures we can't find. And of course, Michael's, I know someone whom I haven't spoken to in several months and with whom I have a deep relationship and was my only friend here in this time for, was it a year that she was stuck here before Discovery arrived? And she's, but let's call Book. And so Book shows up on the ship and asks for permission to come aboard. Do we have Book? I like the way you look.
Yes. Yes, we do.
I like the way you look. Please keep me on your hook. I like the way you swing.
You're hot as hell. Damn straight. Oh, Book. He shows up. He's all, oh, I'm British and a space druid, and you haven't called me in months or whatever. I'm just helping people. My heart made of gold, and I'm super sensitive. And Miles like, I'm captain of ship, and I'm super sensitive, but I got to keep it all together to save people. And this is my family, and my ship's alive, and his name is Nora. And he's, oh, okay, cool. And then they walk down the hall, and there's a tribble. I don't know what that means. Why is there a tribble? Just
was it a tribble, or was it like a tribble? Was it tribble-like?
What is that? What do you mean? Like
it looked a bit sort of, looked more like slimy than a tribble. Tribbles are fluffy.
Tribbles are fluffy. Well, what the heck was it?
I don't know, but I blinked the first time I saw it, I missed it. And the second time I was like, hang on, what's that?
Yeah, and no one, Michael doesn't go, hey, check out our tribble or whatever. They just walk past it like it's nothing.
Did we see anything like this in previous episodes? Do we have a tribble incident?
I don't believe there was a tribble incident on Disco.
Okay.
No, I don't believe so.
I just thought it was very cute, and it was climbing up the thing, and then it slipped off and fell.
Yeah, it was a very cute moment that they disregarded in total. I don't know if that was supposed to be like a triple they can't see or something, or didn't. At that point in the episode, I was like, is that important or no? It was important to me.
It was an Easter egg moment for me.
It was, yes, an Easter egg moment. Tribbles are still, they're just letting us know that Tribbles have survived 1,000 years, at least.
Like the bloody cockroaches of the universe.
But they're light, fluffy, but they are, yeah. If I saw a Tribble walk up my wall, I would grab everything I could hold in my hands and move out of my apartment immediately.
What about cockroaches, mice, rats, that kind of thing?
Those rats, I would definitely leave. Mice, don't like. Roaches, also don't like. Roaches, listen, we don't have to get into a whole thing on roaches, but...
No, but it just says something about New Yorkers.
Yeah, that's right.
When you would move out for a Tribble, but not potentially other...
Yeah.
Parasitic
I would grab my laptop and my glasses, and I would never come back to this apartment if I saw a Tribble. Anyway, their relationship is strained, but Book shows up, and he's, oh, look at all these warp signatures. Let me get rid of this, let me get rid of that. Wouldn't go here, wouldn't go there. Oh, let's go to this beautiful... desert planet Kamau, where there is a guy who likes all the old stuff, and his name is and Kovach is like, cool, let's do that. Continues to stonewall everyone in terms of what information they can get about this. Rainer continues to be antagonistic to Michael and very decisive and not helpful. Michael and Saru speak briefly, and they realize that maybe they have to go outside of their own chain of command to find out what's going on with this Red Director. So Michael gives a call to Tilly, who was in the middle of, she had a potential romantic liaison, I think, with this tall drink of water, but then decided not to, and they were drunk. And so he left, and then they made a plan to walk and talk again later sometime. She replicates some coffee. Michael calls, says, can you help me out? Tilly's, absolutely, I'm going to help you out. They go to the planet of Kamau. We see them land. It's Michael, it's Book, it's Rainer. They're in their desert planet disguises of hoods. And that's it. And then cut to Maul, the lady, and Locke, the lad, as they enter Fred's establishment. And this is when we discover Fred is basically a data-like synth. What the heck? And it's revealed in the conversation that he's been alive for at least 662 years. So perhaps a sort of Easter egg tie-in to Alton. Who's the new Soong? Was it Alton Soong, the one in Picard, who had the planet of...
Yeah, I think so.
Sexy robots? Yeah. Maybe an Alton Soong thing, maybe something else. Who knows? But Fred is able to crack the Romulan puzzle box. He reads the journal. He's, whoa. But then he's, hey, I'll give you $6 for it or something to that effect. And they're like, absolutely not. You've undersold us. A fight ensues. Maul and Locke, despite having been relieved of their weapons, beat the hell out of everybody, and they kill Fred, and they depart. Michael, Book, and Rainer show up there to find the scene of this massacre and the dead synth, quote-unquote synth. Rainer says, I'm going off on the hunt alone, because that's the kind of guy he is. And Michael and Book take a look around. They have Fred... zipped up. I don't know why I wrote zipped up there in my notes. Zipped up to disco. Transporter would have been the word. And then they continue in their pursuit, knowing where they're probably headed, where their ship is not going to be at the docks. It's probably somewhere out in the desert, shielded. So they get to the edge of the thing. Rainer has just got a bead on them. They get there super fast because, as Michael was trying to tell Rainer, Book knows this place and can get around quickly. It's a hover bike chase through the desert, ladies and gentlemen. Get excited. Meanwhile, Tilly cracks the code. Still drunk, but maybe a little less drunk and definitely caffeinated. She's immediately stopped from her final step by two security officers who are about to take her into custody. Admiral Vance intervenes, sends the security people away. Because Admiral Vance, even in these meetings that he's been in with Kovach and Michael and Rainer et al., has been kept in the dark about what this Red Directive is. So he says, oh, it's a shame I wasn't able to stop you in time. And then they open up the file. And what do they see? A Romulan scientist from 800 years ago saying he found something super duper important out here on the edge of the Beta Quadrant. And if it falls to the wrong hands, this little book he's going to put in a puzzle box, then it could mean all their doom. So that's the overarching theme. Meanwhile, there's a chase in the desert. They try to catch up to Malalak before they get to their ship, but they are unable to do so. Malalak get to their ship, fly up, and are going to head for tunnels on the planet so they can escape the overwatch of the Antares and Disco. Rainer is adamant that they fire on the tunnel entrance that Malalak are headed for. Michael says, don't do that. There's a 30% chance of an avalanche. Rainer says, 30%? Come on. Where's your sense of adventure? He orders his ship because Advance decided not to put any one of them in charge, so they all both have autonomy as captains, to fire in the tunnel. Does not create an avalanche, however, it gives Malalak the idea that if they fire a couple of photon torpedoes at the mountain, there will be an avalanche, allowing them to escape. Avalanche, everyone turn your motorbikes around and run away from the avalanche, which they do, which ensues a lot of trying to, they have to save a couple people whose bike is stalled. Michael gets hit pretty hard in the head by a rock, but manages to keep her bike, and you understand the concern between Michael and Book. Rainer and Michael have it out about whether or not they should try to save the people on the planet or pursue Malalak. Michael is able to win out over Rainer's better angels. And the Antares and Disco head down to the planet, literally head first or saucer first, slam into the sand, deflect their shields set to maximum, and are able to stop the avalanche from destroying the town and killing thousands of people. But as the avalanche subsides, Malalak get away, and Rainer super upset. Michael and Book have a bit of a discussion there on the sand once Rainer's left, where they're like, hey, maybe it's time to move on. Maybe this is the time we should have talked, but who knows? This adventure is off. Tilly interrupts to relay to Michael what she found about the Romulans saying all of their doom. Stamets and Culber, meanwhile, have managed to pull the memories out of Fred. There was a cute moment with Stamets and Culber earlier where they were examining the body, and Stamets is searching for a purpose now that he has no spore drive, and this seems like a fun project. It's like when you're with somebody and you're like, I wish you had something you could do, because they're like retired. This is an imaginary scenario that I happen to know, and then they're like, ooh, look, this thing needs to be rewired, and I have wires in the garage. Anyway, because Fred got a good look at the book and has a positronic brain, I'm presuming, they basically are able to read the book and see what some of the messages are, which causes Michael to go, I gotta go talk to Kovic. She goes to talk to Kovic. Saru goes to talk to Tarina as soon as they get back into space dock. And he's, you know what? I gotta consider our relationship as I make a decision about whether to be an ambassador or to stay in Starfleet. And the whole time when things were dicey, I was thinking about you. So Tarina, baby, let's stay together. And Tarina's, I'll do you one better. Let's get married. And that's where that gets left. Michael confronts Kovic, and Kovic drops the, is this what you meant? We had to chat when you said there was an Easter egg of all Easter eggs in this episode, the chase episode. Yes. I was like, damn. I was surprised that they, and I wasn't surprised. This is what they've done every time they've called back. But they were like, let's take a character that's almost out of focus in the background of this and make them the issue for this an entire season, which is how we got Strange New Worlds. And Kovic reveals that Picard found this race of bipedal intelligent life called the Progenitor, or that we call the Progenitors, that apparently created all the intelligent life in the Alpha Quadrant or in all the quadrants of our galaxy. Who knows?
I just love it because I'm just like, the Christians are going to be up in arms by this one.
You love it because it's stirring up shit.
Yeah, I do. How dare you suggest that it wasn't God, the Almighty?
Even if it's science, the end should be. It's Star Trek. Picard meets God, and God's like, hey, what's up, baby? You're the best.
I mean, God, in my mind, would be Whoopi Goldberg in some different form.
Yeah, basically. There's a lot of arguments for Guinan being perhaps a sort of a Q, but with emotional intelligence, thus making her
QEQ.
A Q with EQ. An EQ-Q'd. Yes. So that is what this Romulan scientist found, because he was part of the squad that met the Progenitors back in the Chase episode 800 years ago. And Michael gets read into the Red Directive, and they know that their next mission is to go to a planet with a twin moon system, which Michael's able to figure out that there's actually a planet with three moons, but two of the moons move in perfect sync. So twin moon moons.
Date, just to get a bit nerdy and shit.
Please.
So I think the date was around 600 years ago. because when Michael left, they left and jumped, was it 800 or 900 years into the future? But Picard in that era was like 200 or 300 years ahead of them. Therefore, they're only going back like 600. We're talking about 600 years ago from present day.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But I can't remember how they only jumped 800 years into the future. It wasn't 1200. It doesn't matter. Because that was the quote I was looking for, that why we had to start late. But when Michael says how long it's been since she hated somebody.
Oh, possibly. Since she hated somebody, but I thought we were talking about like how old that we learn that we're looking for is 600 years old.
Well, that was just TNG. That tells you how long ago Michael was in the past when she says, I haven't hated anybody this much in 930.
Oh, okay, okay. Sorry, I'm getting. There's a lot of timey jumps, timey wimeyness.
There's some timey wimeyness. Come on, this is Star Trek. It's not Battlestar Galactica or whatever. Basically, Kovich says this is the mission, and that's why we've got to find it before Mom and Locke. And Michael, in the glee of captains, 1,000 years deep, says her catchphrase to herself, just in excitement for the idea of going on this great chase with great anthropological history, and says, "Let's fly." And steeples her fingers. And that is episode 1, season 5 of Star Trek Discovery. So let's chat about that.
I say, darling, let's do a quick chat about that.
Yes, let's do.
All right, the chase. We have to go watch that now.
Now, yes, obviously. We have homework.
We have homework. We've been given homework by episode 1 of Discovery.
I've got Trek canon homework.
Go watch The Chase and look for every single little clue there is in that.
And there's that. And then you've got to go and find the one with the Vulcan guy in it.
And I don't know. I have a sense of where this season is going. It's been 1,000 years. The Federation has been in effect. And now we're looking at the progenitors who created all life in the galaxy. And what is the Federation's mode going forward? But I don't know what these cool pages of cool calligraphy and a drawing of a circle portend at all. Did I miss something? Was there an Easter egg and all that?
I don't speak that language, so I don't know.
You don't read Romulan?
Not yet. I mean, Klingon is on Duolingo, but Romulan is not.
They really got to step up their Duolingo. Klingon should be top of the heap.
I'm working hard right now. I'm trying to do Spanish, Italian, and now I've decided I want to learn Japanese.
Excuse you?
I know.
That's a lot of languages, Stevie.
It is. I can't take on Klingon or Romulan right now.
I'll take on the Klingon Moktanjaj, and you take on real languages.
Okay.
And yeah, and I'll be a useless at dinner parties except Star Trek themed ones. I don't know. This seems like a great episode to start this season. I understand they went back and had to do some reshoots maybe to give it the epic concluding feeling that it will have in the end.
Do we know how much they've re-recorded? Because I was like, obviously they've re-recorded because Paramount decided this is the final season. And when they originally recorded, they didn't think it was going to be. So now have they re-recorded just the end part, or did they reshoot a lot of it and the whole like plot? Because I think, you know, Discovery's had a lot of hate. And I wonder if this whole TNG storyline is to address some of that hate and pull in some of the TNG fans.
Possibly. That does seem like a little bit of a tie-in to a beloved property. I do feel like Discovery gets... The people who are vocal about hating Discovery are very vocal about it. But the people who love Discovery, like, I don't go on the boards and go, Discovery's great, at me. Because I don't care about fighting about it. I think it's a great show. I do wonder if it's not like they've abandoned what makes Discovery great. Like, it's still all about the relationships between the members of the crew and like the things going on. There was no like simple baddie of the week. I can even tell that Maul and Locke have a bit of a sort of, they're not just going to be evil people. You know what I mean? They're not just going to be like, who was the person in the last season of Picard who was like ruling the morph people? I can only think of one. They were like really smoking cigarettes in the captain's chair and wearing all black and I'll kill you. Whew. Mal and Locke don't have that vibe.
It was Christopher Plummer's daughter.
I'm trying to remember the character's name. Anyway, she was definitely written to be like, this person is a bad person. They have been through a lot, but they're also very cruel. And it seems like Mal and Locke have been through a lot, but they're in love with each other. And they try to be reasonable. Even though they did kill all those people in that fight, they didn't kill the Federation people. I don't know. I think we're going to find out that Mal and Locke have a backstory that's compelling. And I could see, this is probably why people hate Discovery, but I could see like Michael being like, you know what, Mal and Locke, why don't you join the Federation?
I don't know about that, but I feel like that. Oh, we haven't really gotten into episode two and we'll get there. But
okay.
Book is going to have there's some sort of thing going on with Mal and Locke and Book.
Of course, they're couriers. It's complicated. And I think that's why people have trouble with Discovery. They're like, give me the bad guy. Let them be fully bad. Let the crew be about killing the bad guy. Not, this is about identity or your confidence as a pilot. And over the course of 4 episodes, we'll deal with the fact that you're not telling anybody that you're having PTSD syndromes. This is what makes, in my opinion, makes Discovery great. It's rich. It's a rich tapestry of stories, motivations, and it's compelling. Anyway, that's anything you wanted to chat about in this?
No, there were lots of Easter eggs. I thoroughly enjoyed the 2-for drop that we had with episodes 1 and 2. Loved little Easter eggs in the background. We had some TNG. We had our little Tribble moment. We had our Data-like character.
Woo! Yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. Exactly, incredible.
They went straight for the Data look. They gave him the hair, all of that. I was so distracted by that. I was like, what's going on in this scene? What is this Romulan Rubik's Cube that they are trying to decipher? But loved it. Yeah, all good fun.
All good fun. Maybe they'll bring Fred back to life. I don't know. Nora could maybe use a physical agent, although Nora has all the little cute little robots. Anyway, great first episode. Are we going to go to the Easter egg desk for the big Easter egg? Or?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Okay. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Set Phasers. We go immediately now to the Easter egg desk with Stevie Man. Stevie, what have you got for us today?
Well, hi there, Aki. How are you? It is great to be back here on the set of Discovery, Season 5, Episode 1.
Well, we have a plethora, a fountain, if you will, a flotsam, if you will, of Easter eggs for you. I watched some TikTok today about collections of things in the wild.
I love it.
I think with butterflies, it might be a fathom of butterflies.
Ooh.
That might be correct. I'm not sure, but it's things like that. And you can make them up. For instance, someone suggested there might be a bother of mansplainers.
Ooh.
Indeed. So we had the Romulan science vessel from 800 years ago. So this means it's from the late 2300, somewhere between 2380 and 2390. In other words, from the TNG DS9 Voyager era. And as we see in the Red Directive, the design of this small green Romulan ship is nearly identical to a TNG era Romulan scout ship, first seen in the episode The Defector. Very fun. And I'm surprised we went with Romulans because no one likes them. But anyway, so of course we had Fred the Android, played by J. Adam Brown. The antique dealer is revealed to be a Soong-type android. Now, it was Adam Soong who was in Picard.
Oh, yes. Okay, Adam Soong.
And
yes.
Alton is far older than that. Data's human brother was Alton Soong.
Yes.
And I think we saw him in a TNG episode.
That sounds right.
And Fred mentions he hasn't seen a specific puzzle box like this for around 622.27 years, meaning that Fred has been around since at least 2569, and Culbert calls him a surprisingly old model. And I did love the fact that when Fred passed away, Culbert was like, we need to notify his friends and family. You know,
that was very sweet.
It was very sweet, yeah. Signifying the relationship that synths have had in the past and where we are now with synths. Mm-hmm. So I love that. Now, this is a little bit of fun. Among the other vintage tech that Mal and Locke are trying to sell, they mention some self-sealing stem bolts.
Yes.
So these thingamabobs date back to Deep Space Nine, where their exact purpose was shrouded in mystery and vagary. They're, in reality, the self-sealing stem bolt is one of Trek's oldest inside jokes. In the episode Progress, Chief O'Brien, admits that he didn't even know what it did.
Yeah, wasn't it something that they put in the script almost as a joke because they needed a list of things that O'Brien wanted someone to get for him, and then it took off. Anyway, I love that there was a self-stealing stem.
Self-stealing, and maybe that's partly what it was. Let's give him a tongue twister that does nothing.
I think it was something like that. Exactly.
Yes. And the biggest of them all was the progenitors. It revealed that all of this is connected to a 24th century scientist named Dr. Velik. And as you mentioned, was in the background when Picard and Crusher discovered a hidden message from ancient humanoids. Super fun. We must go back and watch The Chase. Season 6, episode 20.
Oh my God.
I know. I thought it was earlier than that. But yes, it was season 6, episode 20, people, if you were going to go and watch that on your Paramount Plus app. As there was one other thing that I thought was delightful. So when Fred is chatting to Moll and Locke, and he encounters them and he says, Moll and Locke. And he's very excited by their names. And he says, togetherness, yes. So hilarious in itself. But then he says, the bilaneal nasal of Moll and the voiceless velar plosive of Locke. Now, I watched this with my speech therapist wife sitting next to me, not particularly engaging, and she howled because of this speech therapist joke.
I actually wanted to run this by your wife to be like, what the hell?
She loved it. So yes, absolutely correct.
Okay, great.
And what it means, so bilaneal, it means two lips. And nasal is referring to the nasal sound. So you're getting it from the lips, the teeth, the nose of the tongue. And the voiceless velar plosive of luck, I think.
Wow.
Yes.
You think you're at the height of nerdiness. You're streaming Star Trek. And then in the middle of it, you go, wow, they just took it to the next level. This person decided to get into speech pathology.
And if there was one thing that was going to unite my wife and I in a Star Trek episode, it was this. I'm so grateful to the writers of this episode for giving me something to bond with my wife over.
A big tent. Star Trek's a big tent.
Tis a big tent.
I'll say it again. Tis a big tent.
Well, Aki, that's it from the Easter Egg Desk. It is back to you in the studio.
Thank you very much. And we go immediately now to, I don't think we have any news. So I think we're going to go immediately to quotable moments.
Quotable moments.
It's been so long since I heard that drop. It really sets me right.
Some of these are preserved for time now. I don't think I could do it that high anymore.
I bet you could. You'd have to warm up to it. You'd really have to do some vocal exercises to get that high falsetto.
Yes, that's
That's like me trying to do a dramatic intro breath. I loved when they got on the motorbikes and they've been having trouble with Rainer, and they're like, Michael's trying to point out that, like, maybe if you listen to me a little bit more and we're less hot-headed and we listen to book, we could, that's how we got here so fast. And he's great, good, try to catch up. And he zooms off on the motorbike and Michael says, I haven't disliked someone this much in 930 years. And then they zoom off after Moll and Locke. I don't want to take, there's one obvious one that it sung to me.
I'd rather not die out here. I've got a saxophone lesson to get to.
Man, I wanted to know so much about that saxophone lesson.
I wondered if that was an Easter egg in itself, like throwing back to our favorite Commander Riker and his trombone.
Yeah, I wonder if Michael's going to the holodeck and jamming with Riker and the jazz band from 10 Forward.
Wouldn't that be great if that's like the end sequence of Discovery Season 5? Like, we're done, guys. Let's just all go into the holodeck and have a party with the entire cast.
Plays Careless Whisper. That was incredible. This episode had everything. So when Saru goes to talk to Tarina, obviously my favorite is Vulcan circumlocutions. And he says, I want to spend my life with you always. And so I'm going to take the ambassadorship. And then Tarina says, if I may, I do believe it would be only logical, given this development, for us to codify our mutual commitment in a more official capacity. To which Saru says, are you asking me to marry you, basically? And Tarina's, yeah, they call it that in some places. So anyway, wedding bells are ringing. So maybe Michael plays saxophone at the wedding.
Maybe.
That could be fun. That's all I got. There's fantastic quotes. You already, the fricative one, I couldn't have written that down. I don't know how you did. The one, fricative. That's the only linguistic word I can think of is fricative. Bilabial monolingual.
Not bilabial, bilaneal.
Bilaneal monolingual.
Unless voiceless, I spelled that wrong. It might have been bilabial. I'll get that.
I don't know. I trust you.
Oh, I don't know. Bilabial, you are correct. Bilabial. I must have typed that incorrectly. I just thought that sounded rude.
sound. Well, excuse me. It's a family show, first of all. And secondly, I would never. Golly.
Do we move on to next
time? Yeah, let's go and move on to next time.
Next time on Set Phasers.
Yes, next time on Set Phasers, we'll talk about episode 2, and possibly we'll have to also talk about episode 3, because I screwed up. And episode 2 is entitled Under the Twin Moons or something like that. Twin Moons. They follow up on this monologue, The Search. And I think it will be an exciting season we have planned. I think now I just go into the blurb. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. Yeah. If you're looking for more episodes of our program, you can find them wherever you get your podcasts. We have like seasons talking all of Discovery, all of Star Trek Picard, all of Strange New Worlds, which I think has only had 2 seasons.
Most of Lower Decks, because we haven't obviously gotten there yet. But yes, do discover our past rundowns of Discovery if you're wanting to catch up and figure out why the hell that Book is back when Book, I thought, left in quite a mess. But yes, that's something perhaps we can tackle in episode 2.
Mm.
But yes, and check us out, leave us a review, and you can join our Patreon, where we give you early access to episodes. And we also have chats with our patrons about nerdy things. So do join us there.
Yeah.
At patreon.com/setphasers.
And we're on Facebook and Instagram at setphasers podcast, I believe.
Yeah, something like that. Just find us on Patreon or YouTube or your Apple Music podcast, Spotify crap. And if you haven't found us there already. Well, anyway, that's it for me. I'm Stevie Manns.
And I'm... You know what? First one back, no pun. I'm Aki Vermees, and this has been Set Phasers, a highly illogical Star Trek podcast.
Computer? End program.